Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. You know, it's a funny thing. People don't think of it, but most of our great American literature is not so much discovered, but rediscovered. Emily Dickinson's poems were hardly known during her lifetime. During his lifetime, by the time he died, Herman Melville was thought of as basically crazy. People thought that that novel, Pierre, was just insane. And Henry James, by the 1950s, he was forgotten. He was being resurrected. And today, I have a poet. He was born in 1914. He published one book during his lifetime, same as Emily Dickinson, by the way, in 1970 from a press, an eccentric press called the Jargon Press. His name itself is beautiful. His name is Alfred Starr Hamilton. And the book that has been republished by a press that has a beautiful name, the name of the press is The Song Cave, and the title is beautiful. The title is A Dark Dream Box of Another Kind, The Poems of Alfred Starr Hamilton. Now, tell me, how did you hear, Alan, of Alfred Starr Hamilton?
Well, I think Ben heard about him first from a teacher of ours, Peter Gizzi, and he went and found the book, which is very hard to find because it's out of print, and he told me about it, and he said, you got to find this book, and I did, and like him, I was amazed.
Ben Estes and Alan Felsenthal are co-editors, co-publishers of The Song Cave, and with them is their confidant and consultant, Amanda Nadelberg. So these got passed on to you, and you said?
I was also amazed, excited to have found something, you know, to read a book and see the way that an influence has passed into things that you already know and love, but you can see how that already influenced people you read.
Now, I had that Jargon Society book already, and an anthology from the 1970s called Quickly Aging Here. But in this book, these very short poems are printed on separate pages, so they shine. They literally do. The cover is a kind of golden wash over a picture of Alfred Starr Hamilton. I can't help it. I'm going to read one poem right away because I thought it was so beautiful. It made me go, oh. I mean, it filled me with awe. Okay, the poem is called Cinderella. Were you ever a little reindeer out in the clear? Not too tiny a reindeer, but a little reindeer, and the way was clear. Were you ever a little reindeer out in the rain? Not a big rain, but a little rain, and the way was clear. And you had your umbrella with you. Not too big an umbrella, but a little umbrella, and your name was Cinderella. Wonderfully, you were invited to a ceremony. Not too big a ball, but a little ball, and you had your umbrella with you. Well, the first thing to say is that there's nothing to be said.
Yeah, right.
It's just so beautiful. It's like a little song to a child. And yet it's so full of poetry things. Not a big reindeer, but a little reindeer. Not a big ball, but a little ball. Not a big rain. And an umbrella, of course an umbrella. It's such a startling thing that, you know, ah, here's an act of freedom. We don't have to know anything to love this poem. This isn't poem in the hard mode. This is poem that's delectable like ice cream. What do you think, Alan?
I agree. And one of the things that I love is that, yeah, nothing's being concealed, that he's giving you everything in the poem. And sometimes he's rhyming in front of you, and from reindeer getting the word rain, you know, and all the N-words, you know, many of them are the same. And umbrella and Cinderella rhyming in front of you, that he's really generous in the way that he's showing you how he's playing with the language.
And in the back of the book, I thought it would be very interesting because he has a personal statement, and I thought we could read it in a round, sentence by sentence, because it is so beautiful. Amanda, would you start?
Sure.
It will be Amanda, the dear confidant and advisor, poet Amanda Nadelberg, followed by Alan Felsenthal, co-editor and poet, followed by Ben Estes, co-editor and poet, followed by Michael Silverblatt, bookworm.
I was born in Montclair, New Jersey.
I'm 55 years old.
I couldn't afford a formal education during the 30s depression.
I have been on the road.
I have been a hitchhiker through 43 states on no money at all.
I am familiar with Salvation Army centers in that manner.
I served subservience 1 year in the armed forces.
I was AWOL.
I got a discharge somehow.
I am a listed socialist, and whenever I am interested in politics.
I have enjoyed reading mostly Shaw, Schopenhauer, Ibsen, Voltaire, Eugene O'Neill, Saroyan, Dos Passos, and Thoreau.
Poets who have influenced me?
Well, I am finally that kind of poet who cannot do anything else but poetry.
I like Keats.
Poetry is another world.
Poetry is the story of the soul.
Poetry is the story of the psyche.
Music is the sound of the soul.
Painting is the picture of the soul.
I like Verdi and Botticelli for music and painting.
I am never a friend of war. I like William Morris and Wilfred Gibson.
Didn't you ever search for another star and others?
The psyche is free.
Poetry is the story of the search for freedom.
Poetry is the story of the psyche and its trials and jubilations.
Until recent years, I have never been able to make up my mind about Thoreau.
I have finally settled in a rooming house, the Walden House, in Montclair.
Poetry is poor.
Art is poor.
The best things are never to be had for riches.
I live on a budget of $80 a month.
I cook my own meals.
I live over a stove.
This is a real good feed for a tramp who is used to that sort of thing.
I'm even contented.
That was the statement Alfred Starr Hamilton made about himself when he was included, it was a rarity, in an anthology of poets of the 70s called Quickly Aging Here. And as far as we know, it's all true. A kind of person whose education probably didn't go beyond high school, who traveled the country. When he got jobs, they included things like filling gumball machines, which he stopped doing because he told his parents, I'm tired of looking at them.
Yeah, exactly.
He had, what, a black dog?
He had a black cat named Anonymous.
And, you know, it's a little bit like the poet you always dreamed about, you thought might be there somewhere, someone who lived a completely poetic life, but without any recourse. His mother died. She left him an inheritance, as I understand it, of $1,000 a year, and he lived on it in a rooming house where he sat with a typewriter typing these amazing poems. What do we know about how much poetry he wrote, Amanda?
Oh, he wrote an incredible amount, and that I feel like I've read most of all was apparent in how much he also submitted his poetry, often and often rejected. But I also think that his poetry accumulates in this way that makes its own world. And so it makes a certain sense that he was prolific.
It's also that, you see, he'd find something he liked. He went with his family on a trip to Ithaca, New York, and he decided that he would submit poetry to Epoch magazine, which for him meant he would send them 3 envelopes a week. Each envelope contained 15 poems, 45 right, poets, right. poems a week. That they just started putting in shoeboxes because there was no one there to read all of them. And the stuff was so odd at the time, and I would say so beautiful, that I guess he seemed to them like a crank, or more than a crank who was a good poet, that rarest of all things.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that they knew what exactly to do with him, but someone did. A man named Jeff Hewitt, who's really responsible for the statement that we just read, because he edited that anthology, and his teacher was the editor of Epoch, David Ray, and so they would just go over the poems together, and Jeff really found something, you know, of a kinship with Alfred, and would go visit him in the boarding house.
And then Jeff was the one who also took the poems then to Jonathan Williams at Jargon, and finally, eventually, convinced him to publish that the one full-length book, Before Hours, in 1970.
You know, Alfred Starr Hamilton was born in 1914. He died in 2005. But there's this one book. Then there are 2 chapbooks, little books of poems. One is called The Big Parade, and one is called...
Sphinx.
Sphinx, right. He later discovered that when he would buy paper, they were in big reams of paper with the name Sphinx. He goes back into, never stops writing.
Never.
But continues to live in a kind of ecstatic silence in a rooming house in Montclair, New Jersey, not far from where he grew up, when in the big house where his mother lived. So what do we know about his family?
We know that they were kind of a large family that came, I think they were like Mayflower, came over on the Mayflower, a well-established East Coast family who ended up kind of maybe making some bad investments during the Depression and lost quite a bit of the money, but had a large house in Montclair that many generations of the family lived in, including Alfred.
And his 2 nieces as well, who are also responsible for helping us put this book together.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm, and we're talking about the poetry of a poet who's being virtually resurrected. I say resurrected, but the original birth didn't quite occur. It's a dark dream book of another kind, The Poems of Alfred Starr Hamilton, and it's published by a press whose officers are with me, called The Song Cave. Let's hear another poem, Amanda.
April lights. But nevertheless, there are some other kinds of blue skies, some other way of counting the summer clouds that stayed. There is the red moon by October, some other kind of February lights, some other kind of January darkness that is deeper, a bronze rake, a winding road to where we are this evening. What I really was so struck by when I first read Alfred Starr Hamilton's poems was the fact that there's this, they create this constant otherness, the fact that there is another February. Who says that there's another February? I thought there was only one. The fact that there's another January, he mentions, this other sky, these other moons, the constant repetition of moon throughout the book, which makes it feel that there are so many. And I think that that sort of, the otherness creates a large uncertainty that I think is a necessary component of art and poetry, at least for what I'm interested in reading.
And I'd like to read you Dark Angel. Watch immediately what he does with tense. Tomorrow night I walked to a dark black star. Did you hear that? Tomorrow night I walked to a dark black star, that I can have uncovered the face of the moon today. And tonight I walk to a seventh noon star in heaven, that I opened the face of heaven and I counted the dark chimes. I walked along the pathway of a black butterfly. I entered the forest of dark bewilderment. Either the other half of the black star that blinds the moon was lifted to the moon on either wing of the noon butterfly. This was a dark angel. During the spool of black thread that unwinds the moon and pulls the wheels of time. Now, this is one of those real cases where, you know, the sound that people make at poetry readings. Wow. And it's, you know, we know sort of things like it. Blake has some things like it. And, of course, our Emily Dickinson. But, you know, it's the rarest of things. An original sensibility that is simple and seems to have no need to impress you. In fact, this is what's so rare. Usually when someone writes this kind of thing, they never tell you that they're bewildered. It seems to go without saying. But he says, I entered the forest of dark bewilderment. Wow, again, another kind of straightforward honesty. He doesn't know where he is, where he's going, and he's going to say so. I want to hear a poem read by Alan Felsenthal, one of the two editors here with us of the Song Cave.
Well, since you mentioned Sphinx before, I figured I'd read that one because it's one of my favorites. Sphinx. The Sphinx said, I wanted no hurt. I wanted no pain ever again. I wondered if that was all that was ever meant and ever happened.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Alan Felsenthal, Amanda Nadelberg, and Ben Estes about the poet Alfred Starr Hamilton, whom they have helped rediscover. The book is called A Dark Dream Box of Another Kind, The Poems of Alfred Starr Hamilton. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Alan Felsenthal, Amanda Nadelberg, and Ben Estes, the two co-editors and the advisor and confidant of the Song Cave Press. We're talking about A Dark Dream Box of Another Kind, the poems of Alfred Starr Hamilton, the latest book from their publishing house, Song Cave. Now tell me, Ben, How many years has this press existed?
We started in 2009, so this is technically our fifth year.
And it's your first full-length book, as I understand it.
This is our first full-length book. The first 3 to 4 years, we primarily published chapbooks devoted to long poems. So it'd be one long poem per book.
And how many of them were there?
Ooh, I think we're probably at about 30.
Uh-huh. So chapbooks first, little books to practice your chops as publishers?
Exactly, exactly. that's exactly how it went. And then, you know, we kind of wanted, while we loved and do still love the form of a long poem and the format of one poem per book, we really kind of wanted to publish various things by each author, you know, to be able to offer, say, 10 poems per book or a full-length manuscript, you know. So while that form of one poem per book was really beautiful and really worked for us really well, we still felt kind of limited by it and wanted to expand.
One of the things that I absolutely love is that they've done so many different kinds of books already, although they've just started. There's a very beautiful translation of Virgil under the title Rude Woods, and it's translated by Nate Clugg. There's a very, to my mind, strange and mathematical book of poetry by Jane Gregory called My Enemies. And I find all of the books worth looking forward to. Now, what is the procedure when you form a little business like this? How do you decide what to publish? How do you all have to agree? Do you all agree to disagree? What's the story?
Well, kind of all of that.
there's
a lot of all of that going on all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of group discussion, a lot of Skyping.
Yeah, I talk to both of them often.
Uh-huh. Well, you're sort of the confidant, and you have two full published books of poetry, so mm-hmm. you're sort of the elder poet here, Amanda Nadelberg.
But I'm the youngest.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks.
From time to time, you get someone like Alfred Starr Hamilton, who seems to write a pure poetry about pure beauty, even when he's distressed. And as you can imagine, someone living with this degree of solitude and a certain amount of sorrow and a certain amount of disapproval of the life around him is going to have a certain amount of sadness, and yet ecstasy informs these poems.
Well, one thing that's so true, I have a comment about what Ben and Alan do, which is that I think what's amazing about the process that you're asking about is that I feel like their process involves a lot of room for all kinds of projects. And that's one of my favorite things about what the Song Cave is doing, that they have a flexibility within themselves and their friendship and their dedication to poetry to include room for other things. But also regarding Alfred's books, Michael, earlier when you were talking about the poem you read, Dark Angel, I think that what happens in that poem and what happens in so many of the poems is that there's a private logic on display here, and that private logic sometimes can seem difficult because the meaning is so potentially in front of us. But I think that there's a mathematical equation that almost happens when the diction is so accessible. There's no word in this book that a five-year-old couldn't understand, but the presence of that fact allows for a kind of other space. Maybe that's this ecstasy that we keep talking about, you know?
Well, you see, as he goes along, I noticed that in one of the late poems, he calls himself a half-wit. And in another of them, he calls himself a dunce-like creature. Mm-hmm. And one of the moving things to me is, what a relief to be in the presence of someone who doesn't have to be smart or successful all the time, but instead effortlessly. It's what he does. He says to us he doesn't do very much besides write poems. Humpty Dumpty says about his ability to explain a poem, there's glory for you. And you feel, you know, Alfred Starr Hamilton finishing a poem and saying, there's glory for you. I mean, glory in all of its senses, the glow that is around an object, the special aura that his words put there, huh?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, one of his lines is, I wanted to have told the story of our stars. And it seems like he is trying to, you know, reach at a harmony of things, like of the order of things.
I think that there's also something about the fact that he did kind of, you know, exist and live in a culture of his own outside of the literary culture of the 60s and 70s and 80s when he could have been publishing that allowed him that kind of glory, you know, and that kind of honesty to no one but himself and able to create his own logic and have that show in this way and develop that.
I want to hear the poem that might be called the title poem, although it doesn't have the title poem. The poem is called Walkative Talkative.
Walkative Talkative. When those are the walkative stars that talk to the immediate prisoners themselves, when those are the talkative stars that walked along the narrow sedge pathways, yet those are lines to another star that were to have been led for changelings around a dark dream box of another kind that houses our more talkative stars.
Ben Estes, one of the editors of the Song Cave Press. I challenge my readers and listeners to be capable of hearing these beautiful poems without a certain amount of tearfulness and dreaminess and happiness and ecstasy and sadness. And I am not surprised to find that this book is the book of poetry that appears perhaps the most frequently on the end of the year's 10 best poetry books. You can find it at Small Press Distribution. You can find it on Amazon. You can order it from the press itself, the Song Cave. I have been talking with Alan Felsenthal, Amanda Nadelberg, and Ben Estes about A Dark Dream Box of Another Kind, the poems of Alfred Starr Hamilton, published by Song Cave. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from A Dark Dream Box of Another Kind at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to recording engineer in Amherst, Bart Rankin at WFCR. Thanks to my assistant, Robert Dewhurst. Thanks to you all. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Gary Steingart is our guest.